And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, January the 3rd, 2017. 1:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program, and I do want to give you a programming note. Tomorrow on this program, we will be joined at 12:15 by Bill Macy. You might not remember Bill Macy. Bill Macy was Walter Finley, B. Arthur's co-star, on the TV series Maud in the 1970s. So he will be with us via telephone tomorrow to discuss his life and times, 12:15 to 1 p.m. tomorrow. And then 1:15 to 2 p.m., we will be joined, now this is a long-distance phone call from Hawaii, by Famous Amos himself, Wally Amos, no longer with the Famous Amos Cookie Company, has his own brand of cookies now. He's known as the Cookie Kahuna. You might have seen him late last year on the TV series Shark Tank, trying to sell his cookies, but he will be with us to tell his life and times tomorrow at 1:15 p.m. Eastern. And that's a big, big honor for us to have him on, because there's a six-hour time difference between here and Hawaii, so he will actually be getting up to do that show at 7:10 in the morning tomorrow, when it's 1:10 in the afternoon here. So, Bill Macy and Wally Amos tomorrow on this program, 12 until 2 p.m. But today, we're going to have a very interesting story. The holiday seasons have ended this year, but many of you who live in this area might have saw the television coverage or the article in the Columbus Dispatch about Don Tootle, who has portrayed Santa Claus at Riverside Hospital for more than 40 years, and has a very interesting position there that he will tell us about. Don, thank you for coming in today.
Scott, happy to be here.
Yeah. Don, what exactly do you do at Riverside every year during the holiday season?
Well, like I say, this started, I've played Santa Claus for the employees, and it started back in the early 70s, and they gave out a nice gift for all the folks. And how I got started on the maternity floor is kind of interesting. There was a one of the employees had a child up there that wasn't doing very well. In fact, they didn't think it would survive, make it past that one Christmas. And she asked if I would come up after I dispensed the gifts to the employees after my shift was over there, and would come up and get a picture taken with her infant son. And I said, of course I will. And I went up, and we did that. And fortunately, the kid survived and thrived and is 40-some years old now. But the nurses said, isn't that interesting? Let's do this for all the kids. So that's how it got started years ago, back in the late 70s, with me going up there. Of course, I was an employee there at the time, but I've since retired. But I missed 1 year in doing that. The year after I retired, no one contacted me about doing it, and I got a call the following year after I retired, and they said, Don, we really missed you. We didn't think you'd still be interested in doing it. And so I said, of course I would. I'd love doing it. And so it continues on.
When you go there, what kind of children are there when you go up?
Well, it's not a pediatric unit. This is a maternity unit. So all these are infants. And in fact, when I'm handed an infant to take a picture with, sometimes they say, well, this one's a half hour old. Scott, there's still steam coming off of them. They're so fresh. But these are all in the well baby maternity floor unit. And there are two floors there. These are all just brand new babies, you know, 1, 2, 3 days old. And then we go to the NICU, neonatal intensive care unit. And when I first started, they didn't have a NICU like it is today, and it's pretty sophisticated. But we get pictures to the extent that we can, because these kids are, these infants are, you know, maybe 2-3 pounds, and with a lot of tubes and circuitry going on there. And if I can, I'll hold them. But but if not, we'll just take a picture by the device they're in. So,
when you go in there as Santa Claus, because they are infants, is this more for the parents or the child?
Well, the kid doesn't even know I'm there,
right,
to be honest,
right,
with you. When we first started doing this, it was fairly efficient, because I would go into where the babies were in their what I call troughs. That's not the proper word for them, but their little housing units there. And they would hand me an infant, take a picture, hand me another infant, take it. Then they would give the picture to the family. The last several years, we've gone room to room because now the babies are kept in the room. They're not so much in a common area. And so the families are quite delighted to see me. But and that's changed a little bit too, because as Columbus becomes more culturally diversified, we get more ethnicity changes, cultural changes, religious changes, and some of them who are not Christians say, no, I don't care to have that done. But the families are usually thrilled to have me in there. Oh, my gosh, Santa's here. What a Kodak moment this is. Mm-hmm. And and then we got involved with, I've got a suit. I want to put the baby in a suit here. So you can't go room to room to room. You have to go here. Come back maybe 15 minutes later when they put all the Christmas attire on the infant, and so it's changed and evolved over the years.
Why do you think this has become such a popular event to the point to where media covers it, newspapers, television?
Oh, I think it can be a filler for a slow news day. And if it's a slow news day, it'll appear on all three channels. If there's something that's happened, a big news event, you know, that's probably one of the first things cut. But I think it's a festive time of year. Everybody loves Santa. And I think it's kind of a good human interest story when Santa shows up on the maternity floor. And years ago, there was a great picture that was on the front page of the Dispatch of me standing over one of the troughs where the infant was housed, and I'm caressing the infant's face, and it's a great picture, and that was very touching for me at that time to see for that to happen.
Having done it for 40 years, not only you talked a little bit about how the ethnicities, religions of certain groups have changed, but how have the parents changed in 40 years?
Oh, I don't think the parents have changed a bit. A mom and dad are a mom and dad, and the thrill of having a baby at Christmas time is always significant. I don't think they've changed it at all, to be honest with you. My perception, anyway.
Is the reception to Santa Claus still what it always has been?
Oftentimes when I go to the floors, obviously there are other siblings there, and that's when I really react to get a reaction when they see Santa Claus coming in their new little baby sister brother's room. And I'm also a professional clown, as you know, with the Shriners, and the reaction among young kids can be the same as if they're seeing a clown too. Sometimes, oh my gosh, this guy is fine from a distance, but you know, Santa Claus has this big beard, this hair coming down, he's in this big red outfit, and it can be overwhelming. So you know, you can react to that if the kid's scared, but 95 times out of 100 the kids react with just thrilled to see Santa Claus.
When you look back at 40 years, what's your most memorable moment?
Well, there have been so many. A difficult question, Scott. I'm just thrilled every year to do that. I'm thrilled to have the opportunity, the health-wise. I'm 40 years older, but I'm just thrilled to have the opportunity to still do that. To see the staff there, the staff is very stable there, and, of course, they all get a picture with Santa Claus, and it's just... It's a joy for me to do. I love sharing my joy of life with others, as a clown and as Santa.
Where do you think that joy comes from?
I think it's great to put a smile on someone's face, and whether it's a clown or Santa. I don't know. It does far more for me oftentimes than I think it does for the people I'm serving.
What does it do for you?
Well, maybe it keeps me young. I don't know. I just know I look forward to that day every year, And they usually call, and we arrange a date about the 1st of December. And I'm thrilled when I get that phone call because I thought, oh, boy, I'm going to be able to do it again this year. They still want me.
I would think going into the intensive care unit, that must be difficult, especially with children.
Yes. I'm thrilled with the job that they do. I'm amazed at the job that they do in the NICU. And their walls are plastered with kids that were 2-3 pounds, and now they're thriving, and they're 5 and 6, and you see them there with their brothers and sisters, and they're just healthy as anything. They do a miraculous job in the NICU, and medical science has the ability to keep these kids stable and alive and able to thrive and grow into a normal, healthy adult. I have more of a problem as a clown sometimes, and I've talked with you about this, seeing kids that perhaps are in a hospice program or you know they're in a terminal illness. That really bothers me more than the Santa job at Christmas time, because most of those kids are going to make it. 99% of them are going to make it.
Yeah. I want to talk more about the clowning, because I think that's very interesting as well. But when you perform Santa Claus, how do you do it? How do you approach it?
Well, you become a different persona. I'm still me underneath that facade, but you have to get in character. And as a clown, you have to get in character. I've talked with you before about when I put my face on, that's an opportunity to change the 6 inches between your ears. You become a different person. And the same when I don the Santa outfit. Doesn't take nearly as long, but I do put makeup on, and I put the suit on. That's a 15-20 minute job. The clown takes about an hour, as you know.
Yeah. Santa Claus, he's been around for a long time.
Sure has.
People see him all different ways. When you approach it, in your mind, who is Santa Claus? What mindset do you get yourself in to be Santa Claus?
A caring, loving person. Who likes to, as I said, likes to share his joy of life with all of people. He's a jolly old elf. And I'm Santa with one other event over the holidays, and these are youngsters, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, and I always tell them, you know, Santa loves you, and I tell everyone on that, you know, Santa loves you, and because I think that's important for them to know and understand.
It seems to me every year when Christmas comes that Santa is starting to get, from some people, a little different reputation. Kids seem to learn about him a little younger. Have you noticed that?
And I'm not sure I'm following you. Santa's evolving into a different character?
Well, I guess I'm trying to say this without saying, in case there are young people listening, saying what I want to say. That people, he's not as big a part of their life for as long. Kids are becoming much more sophisticated with smartphones when they're in first grade, and it becomes a different thing. They can read up on things on their own.
Yeah. I think even if kids know otherwise, they still want to believe. There's something magic there. My grandkids are now 12 and 13 years of age, but... Now maybe they were dumber than a hoe handle. I don't know, but they still believed in Santa up until they were 9 or 10 years of age, which is pushing it. And I asked my son, and I said, "Tim, is something wrong with our kids and grandkids here that they still believe in Santa?" And I think they want to believe, even though they might know otherwise. Yeah. Because I'm afraid they might be afraid. Maybe I won't get Santa won't visit me if he's not real.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I remember long after that happened with me, even after I knew what was going on, I never liked to see presents under the tree before Christmas morning.
Really?
And the tags were still always signed Santa long after.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's an idea. It's an idea, and I think it's a reflection, because most Christmases that people cherish are their first ones.
Sure.
And I think it's a throwback to that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good point.
Yeah. Santa, has the suit changed over the years?
Well, and if you look back at the original Santas, it's evolved somewhat. And I see some very creative suits. I mean, people who are truly professional Santas that grow their own beard and wear their own suit, they have elaborate, that probably cost into the thousands of dollars, you know, with the fur and the velvet and the lacing and everything on it. Somewhat the suit has changed, but not that significant. I haven't seen a significant change, but there are variations on it. I know a lot of Santas who have a unique suit that's different from the traditional suit, and but for the most part, it hasn't changed that much, I don't think.
Being that you worked at Riverside, people know who you are, employees certainly.
Sure.
When you go in, are you Santa when you come in? Is that what you answer to and nothing else?
Depends on the employee. Some of them want to give Santa a hug and a kiss and 'cause they know it's me. No, I try to stay in character.
I have seen a lot of Santa Claus stray, and that is something you don't want to see.
No.
No. It kind of takes the whole thing away.
Well, there's certain ethics involved, such as with the Shriners anyway. If you're a Shriner in costume or clown in costume, you don't you shouldn't be smoking or have any alcoholic beverage, and that's a ethical no-no. Certainly the same would be true about Santa.
Do you know if this has spread to other hospitals? Because I had never really heard about this.
I know they do at Grant. They have a Santa at Grant, but it's been a different person each year. I don't think anyone has the longevity that I do, but I know they have a Santa there. But that person just hands it out to employees. I don't think they visit the maternity. I don't know of anybody who Santa that visits the maternity floor like I've done.
You say it started with the sick child who ended up getting better, thank goodness.
Yeah.
How did it get to the maternity ward?
Well, the child was on the maternity floor.
It was a brand new child. Okay.
Yeah, brand new infant.
And it was the parents who wanted you to come up.
It was the parent who happened to be an employee there. And she worked in the dietary department, and she said, they said that word, would you ask Don to come up and visit, get a picture with my child, might be his only Christmas. Mm. So that certainly was a memorable moment, too.
With all of the laws that have changed in hospitals, HIPAA laws, privacy laws, is this a hard thing to do? Does it matter? Here comes Santa Claus into your room, or do they ask the parents beforehand?
They always ask the parents. Yeah. They have... certainly with the article in the Dispatch and the movie cameras, they have to sign releases. To be honest, Scott, I think all of them have a signed release to consent to do it. I'm not involved with that. That's someone who goes ahead of me and asks if they want Santa. And yes, I think they do have to sign a release. But it doesn't impact me at all.
What was this past year like?
It was another great year. It's a little bit about Riverside. They have one of the largest maternity units, busiest units in the country. They're in the top 10 as far as number of births there. And I think last year they had well over 6,000 births there. And And there's 36 beds on the NICU that's going to expand to 42 beds. And I think in the well baby area, we probably took 65, 70 pictures. And then there in the NICU, that's another 35. So there's well over 100 pictures. And so it takes about 4 hours to make the rounds and do everything.
Having been in the hospital, working for the hospital, how have you seen hospitals change over the last 40 years?
Well, I first started working in the hospital environment I worked in Cincinnati for a couple of years and came up to Riverside in 1966. And the biggest change in a hospital is a generation of revenue. When Medicare came along, we joked about it with something called DRGs, which you got a fixed amount. I don't care if you were there one day or 100 days, you got a fixed amount. It's called diagnostic related groups, an acronym was "The Revenue's Gone." That's what it came out to. But as over the 40 some years I worked in healthcare, 40 years, reimbursement and access to how to get reimbursed and play the reimbursement game became such a huge part of the healthcare industry.
What did you do at the hospital?
My background was in physical therapy, and I started at Riverside as the supervisor and eventually became the director of rehab services for Grant and Riverside, and we started 10 outpatient centers during my tenure there. And so I was director of rehab services, but my background was in physical therapy.
We have a lady who actually does a show here. She's 82, mm-hmm. and she was a nurse in her younger days.
At Marion General?
I think she was at Tiffin.
Oh, okay.
In Tiffin.
Sure.
But she went on to become a professor of psychology at Ohio State, so nursing really was in her early days.
Sure.
So we're talking probably 40s and 50s when she was a nurse. But she says the technology is obviously better now.
Oh, absolutely.
But she felt the nurses were allowed to do more and took more of an interest in those days. And I don't want to put words in her mouth, but that they weren't so – there wasn't so much going on. There's more patients now, understaffed, just different environment. Did you see an environment change?
Well – you know, it wasn't back in the 50s. There was such a subservience to physicians, and I remember a day when a physician entered the nursing charting area, the nurses were supposed to stand. Now today, the nurses would say "kiss off"
yeah.
to a physician, but no, I've seen more autonomy granted to nursing people, nursing professionals, with physicians' assistants, and certainly they have to clear a lot of things with a physician and get their okay, but they have more autonomy as far as making individual decisions in regard to health care, and And I think it's probably a good thing, I think nurses' responsibility have significantly increased. The biggest thing I think is one of the things I noticed, and just as a personal note here, I was in the ER and was admitted for one day last week because I had significant heartburn. I think, my gosh, I'm having the big one here. So I want to make sure it wasn't any cardiac incident. But and it turned out to be heartburn with holiday food, etc. Anyway, and I've seen this so many times. When a nurse, even a physician, comes in, they're standing there at their computer, and there's not that FaceTime. And they might ask you a couple questions, but then they're 10 minutes over there on the computer. And I'm thinking, my gosh, where's the personal interaction here? And I think that's not a good thing. I think we've lost something in the process of documentation through the computer.
Do you think medical care is better now or worse as far as just being taken care of, being able to cure that, feel better quicker, get out of the hospital faster? Recovery time.
Yeah, well, there's certainly, you look at, I know when I was born, my mom talks about being in the hospital for 14 days. Now, a day or two, you're out of there. I remember when they first started total hips and total knees, which was a fantastic procedure to eliminate hip and knee pain. You were there for a long time. Now, they're in and out sometimes in the same day. And so technology has certainly changed a lot, but they want to get you out of that hospital as soon as possible and into a less skilled care environment. technology sure had a huge impact on not only computer-wise, but also medical technology and procedures.
When did you see the technology really getting better?
Well, in rehab medicine, where I worked primarily, I, as I mentioned, I worked with a lot of people with hip and knee pain, and the old arthroplasties and things where they just slice the whole knee open, and they were weeks in rehab and just very painful rehab process. I was amazed with the total hips and knees where, you know, they're standing and walking the next day and you're out of there in just a couple, 3 days. I think that's, now there's, certainly there's been technology in other areas that I'm not familiar with, cardiology, cancer care and things like that. But I think in the 80s and 90s, where the total hips started becoming a popular, you know, people suffer with pain for years, and here they're pain-free. That's amazing.
When you work in a hospital, no matter what division you work in, do you become a little medically aware, medical savvy, maybe more than people who don't time there?
Oh, sure. I know who the good doctors are. and I, you know, there's a lot of, believe me, I don't take this the wrong way, but some doctors are better than others. Let me put it that way. And I think people today pick a lot of physicians on personality as opposed to competence. And they say, oh, I have this problem or that problem. Oh, go see Dr. So-and-so. He or she is so nice. And 50% of them are she's anymore. I work as a standardized patient. This is an aside for the OU Medical School. And I'm given a script, and I go in with symptoms. And the student doctor, these are first and second year med students, have to figure out what a diagnosis is and a plan of care. And so half the people coming in to see me are women anymore. So, I think people pick doctors for crazy reasons, and it's usually on personality and not competence.
If I go to my doctor and I don't work in the medical field, aside from personality, I might like them. What is a good touchstone that I have a good doctor, no matter what I'm going in for?
Well, some of the best doctors I know have lousy personalities, and that oftentimes is our surgeons. And I think, ask someone in the medical field, if you had this, who would you go to? Usually rule of thumb is I was told this when I was in school. People are going to come to you and ask, who should I go to? And you usually give them three names, but usually you give your preferential person to the first name you mentioned, and that's usually who they'll go to. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that they're all-knowing either as far as competence, too.
It's an interesting world to get involved
sure
in
is.
Because a lot of people, it's a scary thing for a lot of people to go in to have something checked out or certainly go in for a surgery. And I think a trepidation is because here comes this person a lot of times who can hold your life in their hands and you've never met them.
Right.
So it's a weird dichotomy in life. Of course, we first met because you're still an Aladdin Shrine clown,
right.
I believe. How did that all come about?
Oh, I've been an admirer of not only clowns, but the Aladdin Shrine clowns for years. I remember, I live in Dublin, Ohio, and I remember seeing them in the parade. And they, one thing that we have is we always have parade gimmicks. And and it's almost like, and we when we march, we space ourselves so there's two abreast here, and then about 10 feet behind. And each person does a parade gimmick. So it's like looking at a comedy show, everyone. And I thought, these guys are really good. Not only their makeup is good, but their gimmicks. They just don't put the face on. Because the first thing happens, the kid will come up to you, okay, you're a clown, do something for me. Make me laugh. And so you have to have a parade gimmick or a pocket gimmick or something. And so I've always been admired the Shrine Clowns, Aladdin Shrine Clowns. And one of the, when my schedule permitted, my kids got a little older, I said, I'm going to be one of those.
How did you develop your clown?
Well, a lot of it had to do with my name. It starts with that, you know, a name like Tootle. The obvious name is Toots. And a lot of people called me Toots before I was a clown. But it just kind of evolves into each person. I'm not sure it was a conscious effort on my part. It just kind of evolved. Who is this person behind this grease paint? Mm-hmm. And it just kind of evolved, I guess.
And who is that person?
I don't know, Scott. It's Toots the Clown. That's who it is.
How did you develop the costume, the look?
Well, when we discussed this at one time, you start out as an apprentice, and we have good mentors in the Latin Clowns, and I learned so much from them. One of my mentors was a guy named Doc Smith. He was a veterinarian in Dublin, and I lived close by, and he was my mentor as far as helping me develop a face, helping me develop an outfit. My wife was very good as a seamstress, and so she has made every one of my outfits. And we'd go to fabric stores and pick out something. Oh, this would look nice, and that's how it evolved.
What is it about being a clown that's enjoyable?
Again, sharing your joy of life with others, making people laugh, make them happy. There's our clown. We have a clown prayer: make them happy, make them laugh, make them forget momentarily all the unpleasant things in their life.
You talked about going to the hospitals. People go to the circuses. They have fun. First of all, when do the circuses normally take place, and where does the money from the circuses go?
Okay. Our Aladdin has their circus. In fact, in Cincinnati, I think they're having one in about three or four weeks. Aladdin has theirs, I think, around the end of March. Now, one misconception is the money raised there does not go for the hospital programs. It stays locally to help sustain Aladdin Shrine Temple, keep that going. So we can go out and make money for the Shrine Hospitals. And I've mentioned this before. Now it takes over $22 a second to support those hospitals. Every second that goes by, another $22 to support the 22 Shrine Hospitals throughout North America.
Where is the closest Shrine Hospital to Marion?
Cincinnati, the Burn Hospital. The next one is Lexington, Kentucky, where the orthopedic program is. But we send kids to Philadelphia, to Chicago, St. Louis, and that's all paid for by the Shriners. The transportation to and from, housing, while they're there, it's all paid for by the Shriners.
Now, I always found this interesting. How does this happen? If you have a sick kid, what do you do? And take me through the process of getting to the hospital.
Well, I have a card in my pocket that says, if I see a kid with an amputation, or I know of, it's just word of mouth. If I know of someone that they know I'm a Shriner, say, hey, can the Shriners help this? And I've sent out two just recently with kids with club feet. And that's a simple procedure. We take care of a children's hospital here. We pay for it. They don't have to go to Lexington. They take care of it at Children's Hospital with Dr. John Keene and his partner. And the problem is people don't know about to ask for help. And they just don't know that the Shriners do this, and it's absolutely free.
So what do you do? If you're listening in Marion today and you have a question, what do you do?
Ask a Shriner. If they have a medical problem, it's orthopedic or a developmental problem, ask a Shriner, hey, can you help me out? Just any Shriner. And they should know what to do.
If you don't know any Shriners, is there a place to call, a place to look up? Or
yes, I'll give you the number. It's 615-475-2609. 475-2609. And that should get you into Kim, who will answer the phone and get you started in the process.
How did this all start? That nobody would get a bill, that things would be taken care of?
Shriners have been around since almost 100 years. Masonry has been around for years. All Shriners are Mason, but Shriners have been around for a little over 100 years. And it started with a group that said, we're all Masons. We do some serious work here. Let's have a fun part of Masonry. And that's how the Shriners started. And then they said, we ought to have a philanthropy. And it started with helping orthopedic kids with their bills, you know, medical bills.
We talked about this one time about being a Mason,
yeah.
And it was thought of for so long to be a secret society.
Yeah.
Why did that come about? Why was it known like that?
Well, so there are a lot of fraternal organizations have secrets, and Masons are no different. It's not a secret society. It's a group of people with secrets that aren't so secret anymore. You can go to the library and get the whole ritual and everything. But why it's that way, I don't know.
Why did it get set? Do you know? When people hear you're a Mason, do you ever get the questions, oh, that's secret, that's different?
I'm amazed at the number of people who don't know what a Mason is or what Shriners are.
What is a Mason?
A Mason is a guy who wants to surround himself with other guys of similar values and to be a better person, learn to be a better person through the values of Masonry. In a nutshell, that's it, Scott.
Is it more of a religion?
Absolutely not. No.
Is it like a Lions Club? Where does it fall? A service group?
It's not a religion. Let me put it that way. However, you do have to believe in a supreme being, a supreme architect of the universe, some deity that put all of this together. Beyond that, I mean, there are. I went in with a Jewish friend. I joined the Masons with a Jewish friend, and we became Scottish Rite together. There are now Muslims who are in Masonry in the Shrine. I don't know if there are any other religious groups. I'm sure there are, but there's no restrictions. All you have to do is, I believe in a supreme being, a God.
You talked about how there are books now where these secrets
are
out. People can look them up. Before that, why were they secrets? If I asked a Mason, if I said, what are the secrets, would they now say them because they're in books, or would they?
No, they wouldn't voluntarily.
They wouldn't volunteer.
No, huh?
And why? I'm not asking you what the secrets are, but why is it a secret?
When they put that all together, Scott, they didn't ask my opinion.
But it is a rule.
It's not something you share publicly.
Do you understand the rule? As you say, you weren't there when they created it, but do you understand why it's important, knowing what the secrets are? Does it make sense to you, I guess, is the best question.
I don't think the organization would crumble if the secrets were published in the paper tomorrow. I think people enjoy being a Mason because of what they get out of it. And the people who they know, who they are surrounded by, are good people. Not that every Mason is a saint. I don't want to imply that. But I've always been impressed with the quality of people who are Masons. I've never been disappointed. I've always been impressed with the quality of people who are Freemasons.
Are there meetings? Are there projects? Is there money raised for a cause like the Shriners?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What? Where does their money go?
The Freemasons, Blue Lodge Masons. Their philanthropy is for dyslexic children. The Scottish Rite Masons, their philanthropy is schizophrenia. Shriners happen to be with orthopedic and burn children.
You say the hallmark of the group is to be a better person.
Yes.
What did it do for you? How were you different before you were a Mason?
Well, I think it reinforced the values I had. Let me know that I was probably on the right track. These folks are decent guys. I admire their qualities as individuals and human beings. It just reinforced hopefully values I already had.
The religion question came up because when you say you have to believe in a
supreme being,
but that doesn't necessarily have to be a religious being. Is that correct?
You know, it's a good question. I've never been asked that, and I don't know the answer, Scott. Good question, though.
When you have people from different religions who show up, obviously
sure.
their higher power mm-hmm. would not be possibly your higher power.
I'm not sure there's a difference between the Jewish God, the Muslim God. You know, they all come from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the Bible. I'm not sure that God is different. I think it's just a different interpretation among individuals.
I tell you why this is interesting to me, because we just did a show right before Christmas, because yeah. we learned statistics on how many people commit suicide during Christmas, how
sure.
much depression goes on. It's one of the high times of the year, but
yeah.
people don't think of it that way. So we did a show on what happens when you die, because we found the number one cause is missing people who are no longer here. And we had a rabbi on, we had a preacher on, we had somebody who had an out-of-body experience on, near-death experience. And what things I didn't know, one of the things, not being Jewish, is that the rabbi told me that the Jewish people don't believe you go anywhere, that this is it, that this, you try to live your best life, and when you die, your energy leaves, but that's it.
Yeah.
And just goes back into the universe. So I think about this when I think about the Masons believing in a higher power. Do you have to believe you go somewhere when you leave here?
No, I don't think so. And I've heard that about the Jewish faith, too. Don't understand it. I've never really got that involved with the Jewish faith. I have a lot of good friends that are Jewish, of the Jewish faith, and admire them. But I don't think so. For example, I'm a reincarnationist. I'm a Methodist, but I also believe in reincarnation. Now, that's not part of John Wesley's faith, but so I think you can have little wrinkles in there.
Do you believe in reincarnation because you remember something, or do you believe this is your first life?
If there's a just and loving God, and I believe there is, I don't think we just have one shot at it. I'm looking at the terrible injustices throughout the world, and the poverty, and the kids in Africa that are just starving to death. And I think, why am I so doggone lucky? And I think we will all experience a plethora of experiences in multiple lives, and then judged on that. That's not part of my Methodist tradition, but that's my personal thing. And it came from there. Why am I so doggone lucky and others aren't?
Do you believe this is your first shot at it?
Who knows? Who knows?
So you would...
I think it would be fascinated, and you know, certainly I became fascinated with this years ago. There was a Jean Dixon, I believe, was her name.
I remember her. She was a psychic.
Psychic, yeah. Yes. And she was big into reincarnation, and I read several of her books, and I said, boy, that makes sense. And I think I've been kind of a it's not something I espouse or go out touting it to everybody, but it makes sense to me.
One more question about the Masons.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you have to believe besides in a higher power going in?
No,
that's the only
yeah.
thing. And basically,
who do you place your trust? You place your trust in God.
And basically, it's to make you a better person.
Absolutely, yes.
Do most people go in thinking they're not at their highest performance?
I don't know. I think everybody comes in at different levels. I think everybody will benefit from the teachings of Masonry, if they adhere to it and take it seriously.
How many more years do you want to be Santa Claus at Riverside?
Until they plant me, Scott.
Forever. Forever.
As long as I'm able to sit up and take nourishment and make the rounds. But it is an ordeal. Like I said, this last year it was almost 3.5 plus hours. And You know, my number one question I'm asked by adults, aren't you hot in that suit? And my stock answer is, no, I'm naked under here. So, as we all are under our clothes.
Exactly right. Somewhere under there, it gets down to the bare facts.
Somewhere under here is a sweaty Don Tootle.
That's exactly right. Is there any day you foresee not wanting to do the get in the clown rig anymore?
Oh, I've slowed down. I've shared with you. My wife has some health issues, and I've slowed down quite a bit. I don't do the circus anymore. I don't perform in the circus. But I do as much as I can, and I've slowed down a little bit on that front.
What has been? We talked about a memorable moment as Santa. Memorable moment as a clown.
Oh, I shared this with you, I when I first became a clown, we were doing a gig for a corporate event or something. There are a lot of kids there. I don't remember exactly where it was, but I remember specifically this one child, and he was deaf and he gave me a sign language, and he signed for me, and I had no idea what I know now, but he gave me some signing. And I asked the mother, and I said, what was he saying? And he said, he's telling you that he loves you. And I tell you, that really struck home with me, and that was touching.
Tough to go to those hospice units, though.
Oh, yeah. You know, when we do go to we go to entertain down at Lexington Shriners Hospital, those kids have adapted so well to their handicap, regardless of what it is, and they're kids who've adapted. It's really tough when you go to the Burn Hospital in Cincinnati, and those kids get the worst of the worst, and those kids, you know, might have all four extremities literally charred off from the burns, and just such facial disfigurations and everything, and that tears your heart out. Just tears your heart out. So,
how do you stay up? Seeing that.
Sometimes you have to walk out of the room. It's tough. Mm. Yeah.
Sometimes life isn't fair.
No, and that gets back to my reincarnation. Why is this kid suffering so much when I've never had to do something like that?
Don, it's always a pleasure when you come in. Well, I enjoyed. I did. It was one of the great things. I picked up the dispatch, and there.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was you, but I knew after reading the little tag who it was.
Yeah.
I know Santa Claus. Yeah. I know this Santa, and I found it's an.
And you've been a good boy, Scott. I've watched you all year.
I'm glad to hear it. Hopefully, we'll have many more of those as time goes on.
I hope so too, bud.
Santa Claus, Toots the Clown, Don Tootle, however you know him. He's always done nice things for me, and hopefully it will continue. Don, thanks for coming in.
Scott, appreciate asking me.
Stay tuned to WWGH Radio for much more programming. But for this day, this is me signing off and heading for the dugout.
If I went into a room where there's more people around, I did a quick look over of all.